Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikulskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
And I'm joined by Wright Thompson. He's a senior writer at ESPN. He's out with a new book, Pappy Land, a story of family, fine bourbon, and the things that last. It's available now wherever your fine books are sold. You know, Wright, I read a book about 20-some years ago. It was Joe Queenan's book, Red Lobster, White Trash, and the Blue Lagoon. And the whole point was a lot of people think they're cultured by going to the Red Lobster, that they're seafood connoisseurs, and then you find out they're not. I've drank Jim Beam over the years. I thought I knew bourbon. I've never had this Pappy Van Winkle Family Reserve, so I found out I'm not exactly the bourbon connoisseur I am. What is it for people that don't know, that think they know bourbon?
Well, first of all, look, man, don't knock on Jim Beam. I like Jim Beam. And, you know, I like Wild Turkey. So, like, I think one of the most important things about bourbon is there is no wrong way to bourbon. Pappy Van Winkle is, I mean, it's almost closer to a cognac in terms of, like, how finely aged and carefully made it is. It is, secondary grain is wheat. It's made by the old Rip Van Winkle Distillery. You cannot find it. I mean, it is impossible to find. And so a cult has sprung up around it. I mean, actually, one of the cool things is these bottles can go $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a piece. And as part of the book promotion, I conned people into giving me 9 bottles of this stuff to give away in the next week. So maybe the coolest part of the whole book, in addition to the fact that, you know, I think a lot of people identify with the story, is that this thing that's impossible to get, we are raffling off 9 bottles of it. I mean, is this live? Because if it's not, the tickets might be gone. I mean, like they're selling fast. So, like, you go to WrightThompson.com, there are all the events, and you can enter to win one of these things. So I just wanted to tell people that because it's such a rare thing, and I'm really excited about it.
You tell this story, though. It's set in Kentucky, the story, and it's such a hard book to pigeonhole. It's about family. It's about booze. It's about, you know, life. You cover sports, so you kind of touch on that. But really, it's a story about family and this whole idea of this family reserve. This bourbon sits for years. People drink it. There's just not that much produced of it. So what is it that makes it particular to this family? They just happen to have the recipe?
Well, it's also their willingness to let it sit in barrels. I mean, bourbon evaporates, and the longer it sits in barrels, the harder it is to keep alive, frankly, and the more fragile it is. There's just not many people who, A, can do the aging, and B, are willing to. You know, you pay taxes on 53 gallons of essentially moonshine you put into a barrel, and then 20 years later, you take out and all but 6 gallons have evaporated. And it's just not a great business model. It just makes for a better product. And I think people understand that when they get a bottle, that all sorts of complicated ideas about home and longing and their family and their past. You know, I read somewhere recently that nostalgia comes from the Greek words for home and pain. And that really, I felt like that made a lot of sense in the context of bourbon. Like, my wife's family is all from Holstein, Iowa, which is, what, 50 miles from you?
You bet.
45, 50 miles?
Mm-hmm.
And so we go to Montana a lot, and I like to drive that way, and we go through Holstein just so my wife can sort of, you know, drive by the family farm where they lived for 3 generations, where strangers live now. And, you know, I think that a really well-made product, and especially an aged product like Pappy Van Winkle, is a way of communing with all of those past lives of you and your family. It might have slipped through your fingers, but the idea still exists to you. And so I think that's why it's so compelling to people.
You're used to covering athletes and for your job with ESPN, and so you get to know them a little bit. And when you get do a deep dive into a family like this, is it the same as getting to know an athlete when you're getting into really the heart and soul? You spent 3 years tracking this Van Winkle family and talking to them. How did that compare to what you do when you call Tom Brady for a quote?
Well, it's really intimate. I mean, you know, 3-4 years with somebody, you know, you get to really know each other. I know them, and they know me. And, I mean, it was really gratifying. So his 4 children, his wife, and his sister have all read it now. And all of them said they learned things about him they didn't know. And, like, that, you let a journalist into your life for 4 years, stuff's going to come out. You know what I mean? Like, I'm asking stuff that other people just know not to ask. And so, I mean, it's interesting how, I mean, it takes a while, but this is the human being on the page, unvarnished. So I'm really proud of that.
When you sat down with the Van Winkle family, did you have an idea where this book was going to go? Because as I read it, it read like a mystery to me because it took twists and turns that I didn't expect. Was it just as surprising to you?
I had no idea. Like, in fact, I wasn't even going to be in it. It wasn't going to be first person. And I wrote a third of it and sent it to Penguin. It was just like, so I know what we talked about, but instead I did this. So I was really nervous. Because if they'd have hated it, I guess I would have had to start over. I just decided that I was reacting in a really strong emotional way to all of these conversations I was having with Julian, and they were making me think about my own life and family, and I decided just to follow that where it took me without overthinking it too much and worrying about it too much, and then if it sucked, I could go back later and erase it. And so, you know, if the book reads like a mystery that ultimately arrives at a satisfying sort of revelation, that's because that's what the process was.
I read a lot about how the family tries to go from one generation to another because you're dealing with the later generations now from Pappy Van Winkle. And so what did you learn about yourself as you try to maybe live up to expectations of people in your life as, you know, fathers, grandfathers, that type of thing?
Well, that's a really good question. I love Bruce Springsteen. And on his Broadway show, he said this thing that really resonated with me and I think speaks to your question and to my answer to it. He said, you can either be ancestors for your children or you can be a ghost. You know, you can either send them out into the world on a rocket ship, armored by your mythology and the memory of you, or your garbage can be wound so tight around their ankles that they don't ever stand a chance. You can be an ancestor or a ghost. And I don't think, you know, I have two daughters. I don't think they expect me to be perfect, but I do want to make sure that I'm an ancestor to them and not a ghost.
I'm chatting with Wright Thompson about his brand new book, Pappy Land, A Story of Family, Fine Bourbon, and the Things That Last. It's available now wherever your fine books are sold. You got Prairie Lights on your book tour this time around. I know that's been a haunt of yours ever since interviewing Dan Gable. What's that Prairie Lights mean to you as an author when you're appearing there and they're selling your book?
It's unbelievable. I mean, like, it's such an honor to be associated with them. And with Iowa City, such a great literary community. But, you know, I mean, like, I'm from an ag family, and I live at an ag state. And so I always feel really at home in Iowa.
You are, you know...
I always feel really at home in Iowa. And I don't know. I like coming there, and I'm very proud to have this event with Prairie Lights.
Well, so much of this book details about the South and the South culture. You live in the South in Mississippi, and so how much does the culture of the South play into it? Because there's parts of the South history that we like to forget, and there's parts of the South history that we like to promote. It's kind of got that dual-edged sword.
Well, you know, it's what Patterson Hood from the Drive-By Truckers calls the duality of the Southern thing. And, I mean, that's very real. I think if you obsess over... You got to be willing to look at the South clearly, and this book absolutely does that. It's an interrogation in some ways of our myth and the fact that, you know, like, take Kentucky, where bourbon is born. Kentucky, sort of people associate Kentucky with the South now, but Kentucky was in the Union in the Civil War, and they were, you know, they had 100,000 troops fighting for the Union, only 30,000 fighting for the Confederacy, and so it seems perfect that bourbon, which is so based around the idea of a myth, is made in a place that now pretends like it lost a war that it actually won. And I mean, I think those ideas are very much very load-bearing in the book.
I also thought it was interesting that you revealed so much of yourself in the book. And was that a decision that came easily to you? I mean, you talked about alcoholic father. You talked about, you know, giving up kind of a sure thing working in your father's law firm. What's that like to bear your soul to so many readers?
You know, it's really funny. You write it in your basement, and it doesn't really occur to you that someone is ever going to read it, you know? And it was pretty bracing for me when I finished and realized it was going out into the world. Ultimately, I just didn't feel like it was fair. Like, readers know readers can tell if you're pulling punches. And so I just felt like I couldn't do that. So, like, if we're going to do this thing, we got to do it. We got to go all the way there, or people would know that I was pulling punches.
I know I used to be a cigar smoker, and I remember the first time I smoked a Cuban cigar, I really couldn't tell the difference. So apparently I don't have the taste buds for it. You've had this Pappy Van Winkle bourbon now. Are you to the point where you can identify it like the old Pepsi Coke taste test, that you could identify it on a heartbeat?
What's interesting is I sort of can. And by the way, I'm like you. Like, you know, these people who smell wine and tell you the notes, like, I can't do any of that. And in fact, I sort of just assume they're all lying about it. But, I mean, I could tell the Pappy just from pouring it. Like, it just has a different consistency. I mean, the viscosity of it is different. I mean, it's the difference between lemonade and motor oil in terms of coating a spoon. You can tell.
Well, I tell you, this book, Pappy Land, A Story of Family, Fine Bourbon, and Things That Last by Wright Thompson, it's a book that it's unlike any book you've ever read. You just can't pigeonhole it into a category. You just have to read it to appreciate it. He's Wright Thompson, senior writer for ESPN. Wright, just a fantastic offering. Thanks for joining us today to talk about it.
No, man, I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time. In the cold Kentucky rain.